"Mrs. Foley?" A head appeared at her door. "I'm Josh Sears." He was 50, tall, losing his hair. He hit the cafeteria line a little too hard, the DDO thought. "Please come in, Dr. Sears. I need you to translate some things for me."
"Sure."
He watched the DDO take some pages off her laser printer and hand them across.
"Okay. It says the date is last March 21st and the place is Beijing.
Council of Ministers building, huh?
Minister Fang is talking to Minister Zhang."
Sears ran his eyes down the page.
"Mrs. Foley, this is hot stuff. They're talking about the possibilities of Iran, no, the old UIR, taking over the Persian Gulf oil fields and what effect it would have on China. Zhang appears to be optimistic, but guarded. Fang is skeptical."
"Oh, this is Fang's notes from a private conversation with Zhang."
"The names mean anything to you?"
"Both are ministers without portfolio. They're both full Politburo members without direct ministerial duties. That means they're both trusted by the chairman, the PRC president, Su Kun Piao."
"What do I need to know about this?"
"We've found a way to crash into their document storage. We believe the documents are genuine."
"Okay, ma'am. In that case, what we have here is pure nitroglycerin. We've suspected this, but here's confirmation. It means that President Ryan did the right thing when he granted diplomatic recognition to Taiwan. The PRC had it coming. They conspired to wage aggressive war. Twice, I bet. We'll see if another of these documents refers to the Japanese adventure. You'll recall that the Japanese industrialists implicated this Zhang guy."
"Okay. I want a written evaluation after lunch. Whatever you might be working on now, Sorgi is more important."
Sears departed, leaving Mary Pat to contemplate her next move. Really, it was Ed's call. She'd wander over to see him.
"How good is it?" Ed asked.
"Calling this Sorgi was unusually prescient for us. It's at least that good."
Since Richard Sorgi's dispatches from Tokyo to Moscow might have saved the Soviet Union in 1941, that got Ed Foley's eyes to widen some.
"Take it to see Jack?"
"Tomorrow?"
"Works for me."
"Pick a name for the source," Foley instructed his wife.
"Songbird will do for now."
It was a sentimental thing for MP, naming agents for birds. It dated back to Cardinal.
Mary Pat leaned over her husband's desk to deliver a kiss before heading back to her own office.
"Songbird?" Ryan asked.
"The overall operation is called Sorgi," Mary Pat told the assembled audience.
"Notes from the Chinese Politburo? Lordy," Vice President Jackson breathed.
"Robbie, if there's operational stuff in here, I want your opinion of it."
"So what will the Americans do?" Fang asked Zhang.
"On the trade issue? They will, finally, bow to the inevitable and grant us most favored nation status and remove their objection to our full entry into the World Trade Organization."
"None too soon," Fang Gan observed.
"That is true."
The financial conditions in the PRC had been well concealed, which was one advantage of the communist form of government. There were over 1,000,000,000 people in mainland China, and less than 30 million on the island across the strait. The Republic of China used its people well, producing more than a quarter of the goods and services the PRC turned out in a given year, with 40 times as many workers and peasants. However, while the mainland coveted the riches, they did not covet the political and economic system that made it possible. Their system was far superior, of course, because theirs was the better ideology. Mao himself had said so. Neither of these two Politburo members, nor any of the others, reflected much on the objective realities. They were as certain in their beliefs as any Western clergyman was in his.
"What of American trade complaints?"
"Do they not understand business?" Zhang asked grandly. "We sell goods to them because of their quality and price. We shop the same way. Yes, I admit their Boeing makes fine airplanes, but so does Airbus. And the Europeans have been more accommodating to us politically. We need to keep the surplus they so kindly give us and spend it on items of importance to us. Next, we will expand our automobile production and enter their auto market, as the Japanese once did. In 5 years, Fang, we will be taking another $10 billion from America annually. When we have the money we need to build up our military, We will be the world's leading power in every respect.
I fear these plans are too ambitious.
What error is this, Fang? Do you doubt our ideas?
Always that question, Fang thought. He was of a mind to set the issue aside. It wasn't worth the trouble. Though he'd mention it just once more to cover his political backside.
What if they don't go along? What if the Americans are troublesome on the trade issue?
They will not be, Zhang assured his old friend. Fang dictated his notes of the discussion to Ming, who then typed them into her computer.
Minister Fang had no idea that his dictation would be in Washington, D.C. in less than 3 hours.
What do you think, George? These cocksuckers. They're talking about how they plan to fuck us over. Well, fuck them. The PRC will not get MFN. They will not get into the WTO, and I think we rattled the Trade Reform Act at them nice and hard. Oh, there's one other thing.
What's that?
CIA doesn't agree, but Mark Gant thinks they're down to negative reserves.
In the hole?
For how much? He says at least $15 billion. Anyway, I'm having lunch with Scott today. What do I tell him about the trade negotiations?
We need China to know that we want the same access to their markets that we've given them to ours, and that we won't tolerate their stealing products from American companies. I want the playing field level and fair for everyone. If they don't want to play that way, we start hurting them.
Fair enough, Mr. President. I will pass that message along to your Secretary of State.
Scott Adler was regarded as too young and inexperienced for the job of Secretary of State, but those who'd seen him work regarded him as a very astute diplomatic technician.
How rough? Cliff Rutledge asked.
Well, Adler replied, I just got off the phone with the President, and he says he wants what he wants, and it's our job to get it for him.
That's a mistake, Scott, the Assistant Secretary of State warned.
Mistake or not, we work for the President.
I suppose so, but Beijing's been pretty good about not tearing us a new asshole over Taiwan. This might not be the right time for us to press on them so hard.
Even as we speak, American jobs are being lost because of their trade policy. When does enough become too much?
And you want me to meet with them?
Sexstate nodded. 4 days from now. Put your position paper together and run it past me. The trade deficit has to come down. They can't make that much money off us and spend it somewhere else.
But they can't buy military hardware from us.
What do they need all that hardware for? What external enemies do they have?
Rutledge stood.
Okay, I can present our case. I'm not fully comfortable with it, but, well, I suppose I don't have to be, do I?
Correct.
Adler didn't really like Rutledge all that much. His background and advancement had been more political than properly earned. He'd been very tight with former Vice President Keelty, for example. But after that incident had settled out, Cliff had dusted off his coattails with admirable speed.